Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind. And the election's 1 month from tomorrow. So what else can we talk about? But first, Wiz, I was there. The chief information officer for the Department of Administration briefs the Elections Commission. Remarkable stats. They processed 550 million emails. 218,000 attempts to break passwords every 6 days. Someone dies of domestic abuse. Retiring Representative Adam Jarko says it's pandering, this DNR rule on CWD. And Leah Vukmir says, I want to be the person who builds that wall. She told that to the Milwaukee Rotary. Wish I was there.
From September 1 of 17 to August 31st of 18, we handled approximately 555 million filtered emails, 77 million vulnerability scans, 58,000 potential malware downloads, 45,000 attempts to exploit web applications, and 218,000 attempts to break passwords. The Elections Commission and DET have partnered with the FBI, Federal Department of Justice, and Homeland Security to review processes, conduct assessments, and evaluate response plans. The execution of our plan has resulted in stronger election security.
In 2017, homicides were committed in 19 separate counties, and many of the 2017 homicide cases reflect the risk factors that research has found to be particularly associated with lethal violence in relationships. One homicide is too many, and one Wisconsinite living their life, losing their life as a result of domestic violence on an average of every 6 days is completely unacceptable.
What has changed in the last 3 months or 6 months or 9 months with respect to CWD that requires an emergency response? I submit to you that nothing has changed. In my opinion, this rule is pure pandering to outdoor writers at large newspapers. It's a disgusting abuse of not only the rulemaking process, but it makes a mockery out of the entire idea of passing emergency rules. It's a political stunt masquerading as policy.
I want to be that person that builds the wall. Now, I know that may not be a popular thing for some of you in this room, but I want you to think about border security from a different perspective. It's not just about building a wall. That wall is not, and that border security isn't just about immigration. It is about drug trafficking. It is about human trafficking. For public health reasons, we want to make sure that that border is secure because we are bringing in diseases that we aren't able to control on a public health side.
We're going to back our message up. We're going to come in to govern. I think you're seeing it at the top of the ticket with future Governor Evers in that. Education is going to be priority, not just in election years, but in all years, that we're going to fix our infrastructure because it's one of the most important things that state government does. We're going to hold Foxconn accountable. We are going to look and take the Medicaid expansion money to increase reimbursement rates, to use the money to expand access. And so we're going to walk the walk on the things that have been priorities and have been neglected.
The question we have to really ask voters is, do you want to go back and relitigate everything of the last 8 years? Because I can promise you that if I am speaker again, we are not going to go back. And I feel confident. I think Governor Walker is going to get reelected. I think that he has got the ideas, the messaging. We've got the ground game. And we've also got the ability to tell a good story because it's true. We have the ability to talk about the good things that we have done. So I think Scott Walker is going to win. But if for some reason Tony Evers wins, we are not going to repeal a single thing, not one, that we have done over the course of the past 8 years. I am proud of our record. I'm proud of the things that we've done. We're not going to turn Wisconsin back.
So Kimberly Clark said to the state Senate, thou shalt vote, we need to know by last Sunday. That didn't happen.
No.
September 30. So this week, though, the two legislative leaders, Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, said we're going to come in on an extraordinary or special session.
Extraordinary, yes.
Extraordinary? Because that's the one they can call,
yep,
as opposed to a gov calls a special.
That's right.
How's that for anal? Anyway, so they're going to come in on November 12th, the Monday after the election, and that'll be a public hearing. And then Senator Fitzgerald said, we want to hold a vote later that month.
Yes.
Do I have this right?
Yes. Fitzgerald's office said the public hearing would likely be before finance. If they can't get those guys together on a certain day, then they would look at a standing committee. But this move is one of two things. It is either to buy time to actually reach a deal after the election, or it is to buy political coverage, provide political coverage for Governor Walker and Roger Roth about this issue for the election. Now, and to be honest with you, I don't know if they can find the votes to pass this bill, no matter when they do it. But the argument being made by Republicans is that they need to take the pressure off of an election to get past November 6th to try and strike a deal. Here's the problem. We had, before this announcement, two Republicans, so they were going to vote no. Chris Cappy of Delafield, Steve Noss of Whitewater. Now, with an 18-15 majority in the Senate, that meant Scott Fitzgerald, the majority leader, needed every remaining Republican plus one Democrat to pass the bill. Since the extraordinary session call, Dave Craig of Big Bend has said he's not going to vote yes either.
He's the
that
third.
Means best case scenario for Scott Fitzgerald is 15 Republican votes, best case scenario.
Best case.
That means two Democrats to vote for the bill.
We don't know where Senator Strobel is. We don't know where Senator Mark Lane is.
Strobel said no comment when I contacted his office. If you catch Republicans and aides off the record, there are lots of concerns in the caucus about this bill. Now, Governor Walker this morning was in Middleton saying that not one Democrat has said that he or she will vote for the bill ahead of the election, which is true.
But yesterday he said it's going to pass. Go ahead.
The problem is you don't have a lot of Republicans clamoring in the Senate to do this bill. What I don't know is the math right now. What number do you need to pass it? What I do know, though, is to this, last time I checked with Jennifer Schilling, who was minority leader in the Senate from La Crosse, nobody, not Roger Roth, who's one of the main backers of the bill, Appleton lawmaker, Governor Walker, or Scott Fitzgerald, has called her and said, how many votes can I get? Can you get me them votes? So if you're trying to strike a deal, why aren't you talking to the minority leader to find out what deal you could reach? Now, maybe they're waiting for the pressure election to pass, thinking that, okay, once that's done, you can get there. But there's another dynamic. What if, and these are what ifs, what if Governor Walker loses? What if the Senate flips to Democratic control,
yes,
starting January? Can you then push through something with that dynamic going on? And oh, by the way, if you haven't involved Democrats in the process of discussions about, you know, this whole thing, what do you have to work out with them in terms of a deal to get support? Because in my time covering lawmakers, and I'm sure some of you, you don't get minority help just for the heck of it. You have to reach some kind of deal to do it.
Okay, but I've earned these gray hairs. I want to go back to the lame duck session after November 2010, when it was the end of the Doyle administration, and there were union pacts up that had, mm-hmm, been negotiated by Democratic Governor Jim Doyle. Democratic Senator Jeff Paley says no, he was on his way out.
I ended up in the Walker administration.
And Senate Majority Leader Russ Decker said no, which immediately they had a caucus and stripped him of that. There's just so much potential drama in these lame duck sessions. So we can't know a way right now that gets them to 17 votes in the state Senate? Or what am I missing when the governor says it's going to pass?
I don't know how they get there. Now, if you look at it from a purely political perspective, for Governor Walker and Roger Roth, you now can tell people in the Fox Valley, I'm fighting for you, right? This gives you some political cover of, we're going to get a vote after the election once things calm down, but for now, I'm out there fighting every day for these jobs to keep these jobs there. I just don't know how this issue plays, though, up there.
Yeah.
Roger Roth's seat, which is mostly the Appleton area, is typically a fairly Republican district in off midterm elections. Does this make it competitive? I don't know. Scott Walker, his path to victory always includes doing very, very well in the Fox Valley. Does this hurt him in the Fox Valley if they don't have a vote? I don't know.
Okay. I want to stay on this, and I want to hear from Assembly. Let's listen to Assembly Speaker Voss and Assembly Democratic Leader Gordon Hintz talk about the Kimberly-Clark package just last week. Let's go to that.
I do think that we should use the idea of giving tax credits like we are giving to Kimberly-Clark sparingly. It should not be a regular thing. But I also believe that if you have the opportunity for a
technologically huge investment in our state like Foxconn, or to keep an anchor corporation who has been here literally for over 100 years, I think we need to do what we can. And remember, we've created a new model that really hadn't been utilized much around the country, where it's really earn the credits. It's not giving anybody a subsidy. It's only saying that if you keep the jobs here, if you grow and expand, if you add more capacity, if you add more physical structure, you are going to be able to have the partner as a partner in the state to be able to see that grow and expansion happen right here in Wisconsin. So I hope the Senate passes it. I hope it's bipartisan, because I know we have some in the Republican caucus in the Senate who have already said they're opposed to the bill. So it's going to require Democrats stepping up like they did for the Bucks Arena, like some did on Foxconn, to have some again step up and say, let's keep Kimberly-Clark right here in Wisconsin.
It's telling that they don't have the votes, and anytime you hear an announcement that we're going to do something after the election, I think it also demonstrates maybe how unpopular these corporate cash payouts are, because it's important to remember that Kimberly-Clark doesn't have any tax liability in Wisconsin, so these refundable credits would be $100 million in cash to a company that just got massive tax cuts at the national level. And we're not talking about new jobs when this state worked together in a bipartisan fashion to do credits for both Mercury Marine and for Oshkosh Corp. Those were for new jobs over a period of time to help them lower the cost and expand during a recession. These are about maintaining existing jobs to an important employer, but they're not going to be alone, and it'd be a slippery slope if we start doing cash payments to a company that could just get rid of these jobs, you know, in a few years. I think we want to look at what the details are. If it's a new bill, if they have a commitment to all of the Kimberly-Clark workers in the state, then I think it becomes a different discussion. But so I think this is a placeholder for you know, a Republican Party that is having a tough time making decisions because the headwinds they face in the electoral cycle.
Okay, let's stay on this, because it's absolutely fascinating. So, as you alluded to, the reaction of Senator Roth, it's in his district. He's up for re-election, opposed by Democrat Lee Snodgrass. This is great news. I look forward to the legislature convening in November to take up this important legislation. My question is, can he not count anyway with three defections? The governor, this is a major step forward. My message to Kimberly-Clark employees is simple. We are fighting for you. As you alluded to, Jennifer Schilling, if Republicans were serious about helping workers in the Fox Valley, they would be having public hearings and votes right now, not after the election. And then One Wisconsin Now did an open record search, perfectly legal, found that the Kimberly-Clark had paid $1 in state corporate income tax over a four-year period. One Wisconsin Now calls that corruption. JR, if Senator Fitzgerald doesn't have the votes, you remember his position? We're not going to the floor until we have vote. Is he still going to hold a vote to put hold Democrats' feet to the fire?
Excellent question, because if, and these are all kinds of ifs, depending on how the elections turn out, may not need the vote anymore, because if it's a political piece to this. Two, there's something that, I mean, in talking to Republicans privately, they'll tell you that, one, we're at unemployment of like 3%. There are places to find jobs. If these jobs go, and they will never say this out loud because they don't sound cold, but if these jobs go away, there are plenty of places to find other jobs. Now, the trade-off is, if you've worked at Kimberly-Clark for 10, 15, 20 years, you lose accrued benefit. You can find another job, but you're going to lose the things you built up over those years working for Kimberly-Clark. The precedent worries people, because what happens with, because these are Foxconn-like terms, that's what we talk about, that they're very generous to retain jobs. Foxconn was to bring an entire industry here, along with suppliers and everything else. This is to keep jobs.
$7 million over 15, $105 million potentially, excuse me.
It's what precedent doesn't set. Those are concerns. What I'm kind of watching for is there some kind of all of a sudden surprise agreement? You know, I've been through this with, like, the Bucks Arena. We were talking about how Republicans are going to pull this thing off and get it done, and magically there were like a bipartisan vote.
$10 million for Pfizer, which went out and sponsored. Okay, go ahead.
So, but we met, you know, they found a way. We've seen this before. So maybe after the election is over, maybe Democrats feel more like, okay, we can work on something like this. Maybe there's some give and take. But right now the math is very difficult and the path is not very wide to get that bill done.
Okay, we agree. Okay, new topic. Did the President Trump, negotiating final terms of this pact with Mexico and Canada, did he significantly help Wisconsin dairy farmers? Because the president of the Farm Bureau says U.S. dairy will gain access to 3.6% of Canada's dairy market, and it eliminates aspects of Canada's dairy program. Governor said it's a big win for Wisconsin farmers. Next step, though, it has to be approved by the legislatures, the Congress, U.S., and the legislatures of Mexico and Canada, and Ron Kind said, nice step, but good step forward, but we have a lot more other things to negotiate and resolve. How big a help for...
In reading coverage of it, it seems like it's more of a sigh of relief for the dairy industry than it is like a big, giant, like, this is going to be great, because it doesn't address the underlying issues with the dairy industry of the overproduction of milk in this country, which is depressed prices, and then so there are lots of other issues like that to deal with. But I mean, it's not a bad thing to have this negotiated. They have, you know, more access to markets.
But I have this one question. I heard on public radio that cheese is still going to be the subject of tariffs to Mexico, but I don't know anything about that, so maybe we should pursue that next. Okay, Tony Evers, Democratic candidate for governor, came out for a Government for Us platform. He offered that this week. Create a nonpartisan redistricting commission that would draw the next legislative boundaries, automatic voter registration at age 18, create an independent inspector general to fight waste, mismanagement, and fraud, abolish the Wisconsin Economic Development Commission, and I went to his website. What does he want to replace them with? Local and regional organizations. He says, quote, we shouldn't make businesses come to Madison to beg for help. Any bold initiatives?
Some of this stuff is, you know, he's announced before, like the doing away the WEDIC. Also, there's a little bit of a dig at the Department of Justice, well, really Brad Schimmel, the Attorney General, because he had employees sign non-disclosure agreements. His package includes banning and government employees from signing those kind of things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of like a wish list of sorts for Democratic priorities, but it's not something that it's like a big shock. A lot of it's kind of like what we kind of knew where Evers was, a lot of things.
So he's playing some offense here, but I don't see any major, major offense.
Not yet. He hasn't laid down some specifics about things, but he's kind of checking off the box of, look, a nonpartisan redistricting commission is something Democrats have been yearning for ever since they got this map in 2011.
Yeah.
That's helped put them in the minority, unless that map changes, could be for a long time.
Right. Okay. And some Republicans say our Constitution says lawmakers are the ones that must formally approve legislative boundaries. However, you get around that by, if they adopt the recommendations of a nonpartisan panel, that gets around that constitutional provision. Your newsletter this morning, I woke up to read your report that we have a new LFB, Legislative Fiscal Bureau memo, which Senator Schilling asked for, Democratic Senator Schilling, which says that that property taxes on this mythical median-valued home were up $27 this year as opposed to last year. Now, what is the significance here?
Well, you got to look at the context. Scott Walker has been nearly obsessed with your property tax bill this entire time in office.
I mean, he's got this West Dallas ad. This woman
started two ads about it this week.
Yep.
One talking about their reforms that have lowered property taxes compared to 8 years ago. Another featuring woman saying that if Evers wins, it'll make it harder to stay in her home. So for Walker, this has been a major piece of every budget he's done. And we call it mythical because this home doesn't really exist. This is a median valued home of about $160,000. But if you take that home in 12 different municipalities, you'll get 12 different property tax bills because of the local levy rate, school referendums, special assessment, you on down the list. Yep. But this is a benchmark that we use in government about where things are at. So all that said, Walker's promise when he signed the budget last summer was your bill in 18 will be lower than 14. His line of stump on the stump now is it'll be lower in 18 than it was in 10. And from what we're looking at, and I don't have a projection for 18 yet from Fiscal Bureau, he'll probably make that mark with 18 versus 10. But 14 versus 18, not so much. And again, I don't have the final numbers for 18. I don't have a projection yet. But you cannot deny that Walker has made progress in keeping property taxes at least flat or even declining a little bit compared to where they were when he was taking over and the rates that were going. And that's one of his folks will stress, that this is down from where it was, and the trajectory before Walker took office was on the uprise.
Okay, but we just saw, just minutes ago, a press release from Democratic leader Hintz saying property taxes were going up based on this LFB memo. But when you look at it long term, let's look at it from December 2010, when the governor, Governor Walker, had just been elected and was about to take office.
Mm-hmm.
Then fast forward, December 2017. Now that we have new numbers, even though they're up over 1 year over another,
$27.
You're still off $87.
Yep.
So this is the governor can still declare victory?
Yeah, and Fiscal Bureau a year ago had projected that the bill that you got in December of 17 and had to pay by January of 18, that bill would drop in the bill you get this December, again, for this median valued home, would drop $21. So it's projected a dip, but I don't have, we have $1.4 billion in school referendums on the ballot in November.
Yeah, let's come back
How
to
much
that.
Of that's approved will definitely impact that final number.
Yeah.
If there are other things that happen, all this kind of stuff that goes into the calculation, but so more likely he'll make his promise. Things ticked up a little bit.
Well, and it's no accident that the Schilling memo was released after the governor issued these two ads, had made public these two ads on property taxes.
And don't forget, the argument that Democrats have is that property taxes are going up because people have approved them, they've raised their taxes on themselves, that the Walker investment education hasn't been enough, and that's prompted these referendums. We had a look from one group this week about the $1.4 billion on the ballot this fall. So that's part of the Democratic argument about this property tax discussion we're having.
Okay, but let's stay on property taxes, because now this week the governor announced a proposed expansion of the homestead tax credit for those over 62. He wants a 50% boost in the maximum credit from $1,168 to $1,752. He wants to raise the threshold for those who would be eligible from $24,680 to $37,020, but when you score it over 3 years, $207 million. Mm-hmm. So that's a big price tag on top of the M&E tax break.
But this goes back into that Walker focus on, what's your property tax bill look like? Trying to sell that, they're cutting property taxes. And the untold story about all this, or the one beneath the surface, is under Governor Walker, we call it buying down the property tax levy. We've taken things that used to be paid for with property tax and paid for them with general purpose revenue, which is basically our main checking account. We put more money in the technical colleges a few years ago to buy down that levy, to reduce how much they rely on property taxes. He's pumped money into schools to help reduce how much they rely on property taxes. All these things are happening. And as long as the revenue keeps coming in, we're okay. But at some point, there's going to be a recession. And I'm not going to predict when it is. I'm not an economist. But when that general purpose revenue stream starts to trickle a little bit, then we have real problems, because it's harder to pay off those bills with what we have in the main checkbook of the state.
Yeah, and I want to correct something I just said. I referred to the M&E tax break, and it's manufacturing and ag tax break, just to set the record straight. Before we go to your stock picks, no surprises, Senator Ron Johnson is going to vote for Judge Kavanaugh, and Tammy Baldwin is going to vote against. No surprises there.
No.
Fallout?
No, Leah Vukmir is trying to make an issue about it. She's got a new op-ed out saying that, these protests you're seeing in Washington this year, just like in 2011 with Act 10, they need somebody. She's trying to jazz up the base a little bit, Republican base, about, they need somebody in Washington D.C. who's going to vote for President Trump's nominees, and maybe trying to appeal those folks that she needs to turn out in November to make this a race.
Okay, let's go to your stock picks. Rising.
So in your career, how many times have you had nights with two debates in October? Not just one, but two, in either the AG, governor, or Senate race.
They're usually spaced out.
Yes. Well, we have a run starting on Monday. It's
Monday
12 days.
Monday is Baldwin-Vukmir. Go ahead.
Like 12 days, we have like 7 or 8 debates. And we have two nights where we have, Friday nights, where we have back-to-back debates, 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock. And one of those nights has a first congressional district debate, which
that's
is going to be
that's ours, yes. Wisconsin, I, and AARP. I'm going to moderate that with Mary Spicuzza, the Journal Sentinel.
And all the time,
Oak Creek, Friday, October 8th, 9th. Okay, I'll stop.
And all the time I've covered debates, I don't know, and talking to insiders about this week, I don't know that I've seen one that really changed the trajectory of a race. I mean, look at 2012. Like, Barack Obama had a very bad first debate, right? He still won. 1988. Lloyd Benson's line to Dan Quayle, "You're no Jack Kennedy," right? He's still elected vice president with George Bush. So what you look for, more or less, is there a big slip-up? Is there some kind of mistake or a line you can then capture and use over and over again going forward? So really, if these debates, people like you and I, we watch them, we're covering the kind of the give and take and the lines and the positions they take out, but we're also watching for the gaffe. Is there a gaffe that can come back to haunt a candidate going forward?
Yeah, but Monday... did you notice the Brewers, they won the division? They could be playing the Rockies on Monday.
Oh.
Do they play in the morning or the evening?
I don't remember.
Where do you think some people are going to be watching Baldwin-Vukmir or maybe Brewers-Rockies?
These debates also fight for time with high school football games on Friday nights.
Yep.
Now, next weekend, I've got a debate on Friday, a debate on Saturday, and a debate on Sunday. A lot of folks are watching other things. I mean, that's, and honestly, like, incumbents like them being on weekend nights in October because people aren't paying as much attention. You know, it's less attention for their challenger. For a Josh Call, who's trying to build up his name ID, he wants the exposure. Leah Vukmir, she wants the exposure to be on the stage, be kind of the same level as a person you're challenging.
Yeah, and I've got the good fortune of debating a forum between Mr. Call and Mr. Schimmel for before the Milwaukee Rotary. Mm-hmm. Okay, short on time.
So, Leah Vukmir, we're starting to see some independent groups come in and spend money on her behalf. There are groups that were associated with Dick Uihlein, Illinois businessman who spent a bunch of money, $11 million plus from groups he held back, spent in the primary for Kevin Nicholson. It's starting to come in. But it's not at a level where you go, that's really a game changer. And there's this whole Kavanaugh nomination debate going on in Washington. That's goosing GOP turnout or enthusiasm, but I don't know if it's going to last for four more weeks.
Good point.
And so the thing is that with Vukmir, she is far behind Tammy Baldwin financially. She needs the support. It's just not coming just yet. Now, Wisconsin next, her super PAC has passed the $1 million mark with this last filing. These two groups from that Uihlein have backed, one spending $200,000 on digital ads attacking Baldwin, mm-hmm. one put $370,000 into radio ads attacking Baldwin and praising Vukmir. But that's not like big money, like the big national money. And the map is still tough. Republicans are still fighting places they thought they had put away by now, like Indiana. And this Kavanaugh thing, is it a sugar high or does it last? And, you know, I think there's the cloture vote this morning. It cleared. The vote will be this Saturday or Sunday to confirm him. If he's confirmed, how do conservatives react? Do they go, okay, I can relax again? Or does it? They keep that kind of unhappiness about the process going until November 6th?
And you saw the national polls this week in terms of measuring enthusiasm. Republicans are now 80% enthused and Democrats 82. So that gap had closed significantly.
And Franklin says his number's going to rise and fall.
Franklin, next week he's going to have numbers on Vukmir and Baldwin mm-hmm. that will... It'll show whether the Senator Baldwin has continued to maintain that big gap.
Yeah.
Okay, falling.
So D.A. McMahon, this guy's out in Trempealeau County. A couple of weird things going on in this office where he closed his office at the funeral of the Jackson County D.A. and required his staff to attend. An office manager didn't want to go. He fired her for not going. She filed a lawsuit. There's been all kinds of stuff like asking him to be removed. Had a primary this week in a recall election. Lost and lost badly. His former assistant got 83% of the vote in the Democratic primary.
83?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a...
So he is no longer there, and now his former assistant, John Sia, sorry if I said that correctly, will face Republican Rick Niemeyer in November, be the next DA.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Okay, to my kids and grandkids in Denver, sorry, go Brewers. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for October 5.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.